Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in studio is our first guest, Clint McAfee. He's the Director of Public Utilities with Park City Municipal. And Michelle DeHaan, Water Quality and Treatment Manager with PCMC. And they're here to talk about, in a little greater detail, some of the planned programs and upgrades to a number of different water treatment and distribution facilities that this town has running. It's a very complex system, and then we'll get into some as to why it's very complex and it has to meet some high regulatory standards. So they're going to talk about some of these planned programs. There's an open house yesterday at the library discussing some of them. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Chris and Mel.
Thank you.
I guess the best way to kind of get into this conversation is to, again, remind people why this system is so complex. It draws upon a number of different sources of raw water in our area, surface and ground. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what that includes?
I'd be happy to, Chris. Park City's water supply consists of about seven different sources that we maintain, and we actually have treatment plants at three of those facilities. As you indicated, we have a creekside water treatment plant that treats groundwater under the influence of surface water, so it's treated like it was a surface water, and that facility just opened up. We'll be having a ribbon cutting at the end of this month. And then the Quinns Junction water treatment plant is a surface water supply, and then finally the Spiro Tunnel water treatment plant is our third facility that's currently in place, and we can talk about the plans for demolition and replacement of that facility here in a moment, but that's a mine tunnel project.
And so there are seven sources then that are treated by these three plants, right?
Correct.
So walk us through what those main sources of our water are.
Okay, so a third of our supply is from the tunnel supplies, from the Judge and the Spiro Tunnels. And a third of our supply is from the Rockport Reservoir off the Weber River, just upstream of Rockport. And then the other third is from groundwater, from wells. So those
Got
are
it.
The primary suppliers.
So, yeah, and you said that the Creekside plant is groundwater, but influenced by surface water. So what is the surface water?
So local springs and rivers can impact our watershed. The local watershed has, you know, natural seepage from local springs and can have introduction of things like microbials or parasites or viruses.
Right.
And so the treatment technologies that were designed for that facility help us mitigate the risk of those types of contaminants from surface water that can actually infiltrate the groundwater supply.
Right, but at Creekside is effectively Park Meadows area.
That's right.
So there's surface water in and around Park Meadows
yep.
that migrates down into the groundwater, and then you're pulling up that groundwater.
Correct.
And treating it. Okay. So that's not Rockport Reservoir. That's the surface water
that's
source.
Right.
Okay. It's the local surface water, you say creeks or wetland systems or so.
Right.
Okay. So those are all the sources of our water. And then they undergo treatment at three different facilities. And there's kind of three different types of treatment. Are you treating for all the same things, or do they have, like you say, they have different types of biological and chemical physical compounds?
So the Creekside water treatment plant and the Quinns Junction water treatment plant are treated for higher risks like the microbial and virus type parameters, where the Spiro water treatment plant is for metals removal. From the mine tunnels. So they are similar technologies from the standpoint that they have filtration, but targeting different types of water quality.
All right. So all three facilities are either being upgraded or, in the case of Creekside, it's brand new. Why do we need a new plant at Creekside? Or why do we need a Creekside facility?
So the Creekside plant is actually an upgrade. There was actually surface water type treatment there previously. Filtration has been added. That's the new technology that we brought into the Creekside plant. And it's a little bit different than the filtration over at the Quinns Junction plant. These are more like a cartridge filter or pleated filter rather than a microfilter like we have at the Quinns Junction plant. So that's the rationale.
And what are we filtrating
regulation.
Out? what are we filtering out?
So we're essentially filtering out, like I mentioned, things like microbial activity.
Oh, okay. Not just sand and grit or so, but actual microbes too. You can filter out down to that level.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So that's the Creekside facility. Let's work our way up to Three Kings facility. What's going on at Quinn's? What's the expansion there?
So the Quinn's plant was just upgraded. For a couple of years in a row, we've had to shut down the Quinn's plant in the spring time period due to the fact that the Weber River water quality does change in the springtime when we have heavy runoff. Mm. We have more organics in the water, and we also have, interestingly, manganese in the water. And these contaminants can cause some discoloration of the water, kind of turning it to a yellowish-brown color. So we have to actually treat to reduce the level of those contaminants in the springtime. So we've added some new filters and some new adsorbers for us to be able to reduce the concentrations of those different compounds.
Now, manganese, what's the source of this? Like, why, you know, that's not a common water quality concern that we see around here.
Yeah, it's interesting. We actually do have manganese in the background in the soils. And so that's how it comes into the watershed throughout the Weber River. And it's actually, a phenomenon that happens during the springtime, during a runoff. And we actually do have manganese in our mine tunnels as well. So it's very prevalent in the area.
You have lots of things, lots of other metals in mine tunnel type of water, but manganese is the most prevalent or at the highest concentration?
For the metals in the Weber River water specifically.
This is in the Weber River
That's
water.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there, like I say, there could be other metals there, but there's manganese. And why are you treating it? Is that because the state requires it or the EPA requires it?
It's actually an aesthetic issue. So when we add chlorine to the water for disinfection, it oxidizes manganese. And so when it oxidizes manganese, it shifts the color and it converts it. So it's an interesting chemical reaction.
So it's a visual thing.
It is.
In effect. It's not a health and safety per se.
That's correct.
Health thing.
Interesting.
Okay. Because don't we need manganese? No, don't we?
We
should have some measures of manganese, like any trace metals on. So,
but okay. I can imagine that the visibility, like kind of the appearance of water, is pretty important to consumers.
Right. It is, and you know, sometimes in other areas of the country, people have challenges with iron and manganese, and so you can have some discoloration, like in your laundry. So you have a little bit of a yellowish tint or brownish tint when you have manganese in high concentrations. We're fortunate that it's relatively low, but we do have to knock down that background color to make sure we have a clear water quality.
And just to note, on the Quinn's water treatment plant, there's kind of a seasonal variation to the water quality, as Michelle mentioned. And with 7 water sources available to us, we could simply just not use that water during the times where the Weber River is upset, mm-hmm. Usually during the spring or heavy rain events. However, when we demolish the existing Three Kings water treatment plant, we will rely on that water source as well as Creekside to supply the water to the city. So there's a large water supply component to both of these projects as well. We looked at options to convert the Park Meadows well to raw water, for example, just to feed the golf courses. But we're unable to do so because the Three Kings construction will take Spiro offline for 2 or 3 summers. And so both of those projects have a water supply component as well. It's kind of belt and suspenders for our portfolio and to make it through the construction of Three Kings.
So it sounds like there's a fair amount of flexibility. There's enough water that we can kind of shift around which sources we're pulling from at any given time.
We can, especially right now with all of them running. Mm. However, we haven't used Judge Tunnel for about 5 years now due to water quality concerns. And then Spiro Tunnel and possibly Thurriot Springs will go offline for about 2 or 3 summers during the reconstruction of Three Kings. So the last several years, we've been really investing in our water supply reliability. That's reflected in Creekside and Quinn's. so we can make it through that time. And then once Three Kings is running, we'll have a very robust system and actually more water than the community currently consumes.
I'm glad you said that. And we'll get to Three Kings, the detail. I want to talk a little bit about water demand. What is the trends in water demands over the last 5, 6, 7 years?
Over that time period, they're trending downward, both in peak day consumption, so the amount of water that's consumed in a peak day, and annual volume.
Really?
And that, you know, you talk about complexity of our water system. Another thing, you know, aside from all the water quality challenges that Michelle has to deal with on a day-to-day basis, other things contribute to the complexity of the system, including the elevation difference in our system. So we're pumping water 4,000 feet. We're at the top of this part of the watershed, so we don't have any man-made or significant natural storage. You know, you look at the Salt Lake Valley, and they have all the reservoirs available to them. And so, you know, conservation is key in mitigating that peak day demand, because we simply just don't have a big storage reservoir to pull from on July 4th when we see the big peak day.
Is July 4th frequently the peak day?
It's close. I don't think it necessarily has to do with all the people in town. It's more just the time of year.
Okay.
Most of our peak day summer demand is driven by outdoor irrigation.
Right.
So it's this year, I don't know what our peak day or when it occurred, but I think July 3rd we hit 8 million gallons a day of production.
Wow.
And then we hit that again in the wintertime when snowmaking starts up.
Gosh. Oh, okay.
Because that's another unique thing about our system.
Yeah.
Right. So you have summer and winter peak demands, which are kind of equal. But is summer in general a greater demand because of irrigation needs?
It's a larger demand. We hit about 8 million gallons a day of what we call our treated demand. In addition to that, we supply water to the creek and two golf courses. And in certain periods during the week, we supply water downstream for agricultural use as well.
Wow. And again, do you have a breakout between what percentage of water in the summer is used for irrigation versus other potable?
It's about two-thirds.
Two-thirds of our water in the summer on a daily basis is used to water, well, ostensibly, grass. Right?
Good old
Correct.
Kentucky bluegrass.
Okay, right. Correct. And we're watering grass with drinking water?
That's correct.
That's correct, yeah.
So the golf courses are supplied water directly from the golf course ponds, which is untreated for now, anyway.
Yeah.
And both golf courses are.
Right.
But all other demands in the system are met with treated water.
Wow.
Okay. But, I guess in relation to this, you're still seeing a decrease over the past few years, which is interesting because the population's been increasing. What do you think is driving that?
I would say the biggest driver is the cost of water.
Okay.
And we actually amplified that effect recently, in the last couple of years, really, by modifying our water tiers. So we have a tiered system. You know, you pay a base rate, and then you pay a consumption charge. And we break it out into about 5,000-gallon increments. So the first 5,000 gallons used in a month, we tried to keep it a lower cost. It's still a high cost. But as you use more and more water, you pay more and more per 1,000 gallons. So, for example, the first 5,000 gallons per 1,000 is about $6. And I'm rounding up here.
Yeah.
Per 1,000. And I think if it's over 50,000, which some residents use over 50,000 gallons in a month.
No kidding.
Wow.
You're paying up to $30.
Do they have some type of wetland system, artificial wetlands that they're 50,000 gallons a month they're using?
Well, that's where the high price point.
These aren't farmers. These are residents. Clint, I'm saying this for you. You don't have to say it. You just nod. These are residents. These are not businesses or agriculture. This is personal property. 50,000 gallons, 1,600 gallons a day, every day.
And that's just, again, the trigger point for the higher price.
I know.
They don't, that we have residents using well over 50.
I know.
But, you know, it's a choice, and I think the majority of users have made the choice to use less water because of that pricing structure.
Right.
I would say the other one, just more awareness. You know, WaterSmart, the customer portal, it makes a lot of information instantaneously available to the water user. Because I think, you know, when water was cheap, you didn't have information. Sometimes we only read once per year. You read your meter once per year.
Right.
You just, the customers didn't really have a reference point for how much water they're using or what it meant. Now they have a direct link to their bank account, and I think that's probably the biggest driver.
Well, and do they also have a sense of how much their neighbors are using? Do they get that kind of information?
The WaterSmart customer portal does compare you to your neighbors, which aren't necessarily your, you know, your adjacent, you know, people on your street. It's more comparable users, so same square footage of house, same property size and irrigated area.
Got it. Well, we have about 5 minutes left, and we want to make time to talk about the Three Kings Project. So this is a major one because an entire facility is being removed and replaced. So I guess what's the motivation for that, just to start out?
There's a couple motivations. Number one, water quality is the primary driver here. The current Spiro Water Treatment Plant is a couple of decades old at this point, and so is the technology. And regulations have changed. They've definitely tightened up on the drinking water side, and we also have to comply with the Clean Water Act. So the tunnel water goes down McLeod and ultimately Silver Creek with the Judge Tunnel water. And those waters do contain metals from the mining days, and so we do have to remove those metals for drinking water purposes and now stream water purposes as well for the Clean Water Act. So we have metals from antimony to zinc to cadmium, arsenic, and those are all removed to drinking water standards currently at the Spiro Water Treatment Plant. However, that plant's not sized for our long-term needs, nor is it meet the water quality standards that we need for stream standards. So the new plant has undergone a lot of preliminary design, and we've looked at pilot testing for about 9 months to prove out the technology that we'll be completing design of and then construction. And we'll be demolishing the Spiro treatment plant in 2020, and the new plant will be online before 2024. So
2024.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. So quite a bit of time, quite a bit of work that has to be done there.
That's right.
Okay. But like you say, in the interim, while that work's being done, the other two plants can make up,
right,
for the demands that plant can provide. Okay.
I think I also read here. Let's see, that the project also includes a new golf maintenance facility. What is that?
Yeah. So this. This project is driving over $100 million worth of work over the next 5 years. Golf maintenance facility
is the home that's using 50,000 gallons per month? Yeah, are they kicking in a good deal of this?
They're paying a higher proportion.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you.
I know we're running short on time, but the golf.
Sorry.
We've kind of broke this project down into three components. We have to redo the first few hundred feet of Spiro Tunnel. We have to build pipelines between the Spiro Tunnel and the new treatment plant. And then once we get to the treatment plant site, currently water, parks maintenance, and golf maintenance, and actually building maintenance currently operate out of that facility. We're going to scrape the entire site and only water will be rebuilt there, and so we have to relocate golf maintenance. We're proposing a new facility for them on the golf course between the driving range and hole 10. Parks maintenance will move to the existing Iron Horse facility as well as building maintenance. The other component is we are redoing pipelines along the Highway 248 corridor. So that will ensure we can deliver water from Quinn's treatment plant into the system reliably for those years. And we're extending the Rockport pipeline over to McLeod Creek for long-term creek augmentation as a part of our water quality program. So those are the project forward-looking. You know, we've talked about the creek side and the Quinn's water treatment plant upgrades are things we've already done, and now the projects I just described are things we're looking at in the next 5 years.
Where will that Rockport pipeline connect to McLeod Creek?
So currently, just big picture here, we have a pipeline that dips into Rockport Reservoir. We pump it over the hill. It's currently stubbed at Wyatt Earp in the east side of Prospect, or the community. We'll extend it down Highway 248, across 224, through the golf course, and actually connect it right into our treatment plant.
Okay.
We'll put a micro hydro turbine on that pipeline. It comes in at about, can't remember the exact, over 100 PSI. So we'll take a little power, we'll generate a little power with that pressure, and then be able to augment the creek, supply water to the golf courses, which will enable us to actually treat more mine tunnel water.
Okay. Last minute or two. When all of this is done, let's say 2024 or so?
23 is probably
okay.
The... Yeah.
Are we good for some period of time out? You know, this is all kind of a master plan, an evolution of a master planning effort. Does that cover us for the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah. So, you know, you break this into three major chunks.
Yeah.
Water supply... We kind of check that box with Quinn's and Rockport. We're really focused on water quality right now.
Right.
With the three projects we're talking about, Creekside, Quinn's, and Three Kings. And then I think we are set up, I guess,
yeah.
Lack of better words.
Well, barring any unforeseen situations.
Correct. Federal mandates, we lose a source, a tunnel collapse. You know, there's
right.
A lot of things with this complicated system that could change. And really, we'll focus our attention after Three Kings to asset management. So just, you know, coming up with a comprehensive replacement program. You know, eventually everything will be replaced, including the new Three Kings water treatment plant. I hope I don't have to do that.
Right. But
you know,
all right.
In 50 years or so, someone will. And we actually will have a surplus of water available. And we're talking right now with the... what we call the regional water entities, Mountain Regional, Summit Water, Centerville Basin, Reclamation District, and Weber Basin, on potentially on a temporary basis leasing some of that surplus water.
Okay. Got to wrap up real quick. Ribbon cutting ceremony.
Yeah, we're anticipating. We don't have a date yet, but it's going to be the end of this month or early August.
Okay.
And we'll have the Creekside Water Treatment Plant ribbon cutting as our new startup. With the rest of the neighborhood there.
Great. And can people go online to
learn all
about this?
Yeah, if they go to parkcitywater.org, they can learn about our different supplies and the treatment. Our annual consumer confidence report just came out
right.
At the end of June, and that's also online, both in English and in Spanish.
Perfect. Clint McAfee, Director of Public Utilities, and Michelle DeHaan, Water Quality and Treatment Manager, both with Park City Municipal. Thanks as always.
Yep.
For coming in and sharing
thanks
this
for
information.
Having us on.
You bet. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have Luke Carton, also from Park City Municipal, and Chad Ambrose from Rocky Mountain Power, talking about a program they're collaborating on. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Carolyn from Recycle Utah. Join us for a celebration of local food and farmers at our third annual 100-mile meal on August 11th. This beautiful evening includes live music, lawn games, drinks, and a five-course dinner featuring ingredients from a 100-mile radius of the recycling center. Tickets available at recycleutah.org. Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for over 25 years, and we support KPCW.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Hi, this is Bill Rock. The Vail Epic Promise Foundation, a nonprofit organization, is a proud supporter of KPCW. The foundation provides Park City Mountain employees with grants and emergencies and for educational purposes. Information is available to Park City Mountain employees at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in studio, the second half of the show, is Luke Carton, Sustainability Director with Park City Municipal, and Chad Ambrose with Rocky Mountain Power. Communications, public relations.
Whatever.
Future CEO, as we like to refer to him.
Well, on your way to future CEO, the two of you are collaborating on a project with respect to LED lighting and local businesses. Can you give us a shakedown on that?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It's a great opportunity for us to be in Park City to provide a program that's called our Small Business Direct Install Program. What that is we have the opportunity to literally go and knock doors of small businesses up and down, whether it be Main Street, wherever it is here in Park City, and work hand in hand with our business customers, along with government customers. It's a program that is really slick in that we knock the door, we can provide right there an audit, looking at the customer's lighting. And once they get that audit done, we can provide them on-the-spot savings analysis. And then should the customer decide to proceed with an installation of a lamp-for-lamp replacement with going from old fluorescents or less efficient lighting to more premium-efficient LEDs, we can actually pay up to, 75% of the project Rocky Mountain Power will pay for through our energy efficiency program. And that incentive that we provide is a direct incentive to the customer. So let's say we go to a customer's business, we go in, we provide that audit. They want
to do
the
project.
How long does
that
take? Not long at all, really quick. It's done within a day. The audit is done very quickly.
Okay, and is that scheduled? Or like you say, literally knock on their door
We'll knock on the door. If they want to do it then, we could do it right then.
Okay.
If not, we schedule a time that's best for them. And should they choose to go forward with it, 75% of those costs are taken care of immediately. So all they get is an invoice for the balance of the project.
Yeah, and to put it in perspective, Chris, so I went along on one of these walk-alongs. It took about maybe 5 minutes, if that. It was a $1,000 project, and the person's out-of-pocket cost was $230. And the other great thing is most of these have an ROI of well under a year and a half. So
Right. Everyone
always says, this is too good to be true. You know, you have the utility showing up.
Yeah.
And the other great thing is kind of a one-stop shop for small businesses, so you don't have to worry about finding, all right, hey, I got to change these lights. Now I got to go find the lights. I got to go find potentially an electrician. Mm-hmm. I got to go find... Yeah. This is just, you sign the paper, the utility pays, 75% of it, and it's done within 2 weeks. And the great thing is you know, we've had quite a few businesses in Park City already take advantage of this, and it's rolling, and we want to keep pushing it because this is kind of one of those limited time offers, so we want to get folks going here in the next month.
Go ahead now.
I was just going to ask, so who's eligible? We say small business, where's the size cutoff?
Yeah.
Where's the boundary?
Absolutely. So if you've got when you look at your power bill, if you've got 200 kilowatts of demand or less, you're eligible for the program. So any of those customers, now I'm going to get nerdy here, rate schedule 6, 6A, 6B, and schedule 23, those are the schedules of commercial customers that are eligible. We really are focusing...
Is that on their bill?
It is on their bill.
Okay.
They'll be able to see exactly what that rate schedule is. But we're really trying to focus on this group of customers because, to Luke, your point... It's not that they're overlooked, but we work a lot with our large customers, our large industrial and commercial customers. But this is a way for us to really make it easy on these small businesses to save energy and to do the right thing. And it is a limited time program. It's kind of, we roll in the trucks, we get it done and then we pull out just to be cost effective.
And is this limited to Park City proper, this program?
Yes, currently this program is limited to Park City proper. We do have some other areas in the Salt Lake Valley that we're working on as well. But an interesting story, we started this program with Colville and Camas. And Mayor Trevor Johnson, he actually went and knocked doors with Wildan, who is our Rocky Mountain Power contractor, and very successful.
So, right. Yeah. I'm almost curious as to why a business wouldn't take you up unless they don't have that 25% of the cost immediately available. But it seems like it's a no-brainer on an economic basis. But maybe some businesses, I wouldn't say they push back, but they may just say, well, God, it's a great deal, but I just don't have it.
Yeah, and Chris, we're not talking huge. I mean, a lot of these are kind of the quick and dirty. That's what it's made to do. Is this isn't like architectural lighting or anything like that. These are, you know, hey, these hallway lights you never got, or the light in the bathroom, or something along those lines. It is in the Snyderville Basin, though, as well, right, Chad?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So I wasn't clear.
Yeah, so it is within city limits and also Snyderville Basin as well. So if you're, you know, if you've got Park City as one of your addresses, get in touch, because like I said, this is really truly made to be painless and quick. And the crews, they know what they're doing. So they come in, do a lighting count. And the other thing, Chris, to hit on the concern of capital outlay up front, this isn't a $10,000 project. Mm. These are usually like a couple hundred bucks that you're going to get the money back pretty quick. Usually, like I said, under a year. And the utility will pay for all that. So you don't have to file the rebate stuff. You don't have to, like I said, find an electrician. It's just you sign the paper, you cut a small check, and next thing you know, you got new lights.
It would be really interesting to see the electric bill, you know, a month or two later and start comparing the year-over-year difference. With the owner will see that, but it would be interesting to share it, if the owner could share that with you and showcase the difference that it makes.
Absolutely. There's a reason we do it.
But again, it's not the Walmart at Kimball Junction or the grocery store. They're not eligible. They're not in that schedule, per se. It's the smaller stores, independent stores.
Yeah, and it's based on the demand.
Yeah.
So their kilowatt demand.
And if people don't know, which is absolutely understandable if you don't know your rate schedule, just reach out, because even if this program doesn't apply to you, there are many other programs that will. And Schedule 6 and 6A are decent sized buildings. We're not just talking a couple hundred square foot office buildings. These are still decent sized buildings. And so we've been running it for just about a month now. This is a part of our greater program called Watt Smart Communities. So we had three different workshops with both businesses, nonprofits, some residents, some HOA managers and property managers, just to kind of understand how we can leverage the most utility incentives here and reduce our energy use. Park City proper, in other words, within city limits, we use about 248 million kilowatt hours a year. Or to put it in perspective, we pay about $20 million in electricity bills. And that's cost for electricity, that's cost for, you know, energy efficiency, tax, all these other things. Mm. So it's significant funds. And you know, the way we equate it is, if we could imagine saving 20% of that, that's $4 million staying within our community, making it easier to run. So this is a major piece of it, because as Chad hit on, you know, the commercial and industrial customers, you know, when there's snowmaking upgrades or chairlift upgrades, they're dealing directly with the utility. But the small businesses are usually kind of skipped over a little bit, or it's just a little harder to get them engaged. So that was the goal of this program, was to make it really, truly simple. And Chad's got some participation numbers, too, because it's been amazing just for the first month we've been running it.
Do you want to hear some numbers?
Yeah. If you just join us, we're speaking with Chad Ambrose with Rocky Mountain Power and Luke Carton, Sustainability Director with Park City Municipal, talking about a business related program on swapping out LEDs or swapping out incandescents and CFLs with LED lighting, et cetera. Give us some numbers.
Okay. So we've been at it for just over a month. We've so far done 41 projects, and we have saved, these great customers, I should say, have saved through the participation 311,000 kilowatt hours. Now, as I mentioned, this is really a limited time program up here in Park City. Our plan is really to potentially leave or pack up mid-late August. Okay. But I'd like to see us really rock and roll up here, and there's the potential of us extending if we can.
And if somebody's interested, who should they contact?
Okay, I've got two phone numbers.
Okay.
Okay, Andrew Napik. It's K-N-A-P-I-K. Andrew's direct cell phone number is 385-441-3880.
Okay.
And I've got one more backup contact. Her name is Cheryl. Her direct cell phone is 385-261-1462. Customers can also go to the Rocky Mountain Power website and type in small business direct install, and they'll get information.
Okay.
They could reach out at City Hall, too. Like I said, we can get them tied right into Andrew and the Rocky Mountain Power team as well. We're regularly touching base to make sure we're making this
How did you find those 41 projects? Was that door knocking or just going around and...
Yeah, we literally, our contractor again is Wildan. They're all labeled Rocky Mountain Power, so when they knock on your door, you'll be able to see that. They literally knock on doors up and down Main Street throughout the whole area that we've talked about. They knock doors, find a convenient time, do the audit. It's no obligation there. Obligation is basically when you do the final signature, we get it installed, and there's a small invoice.
Okay. So... why is Rocky Mountain Power doing this, Chad?
Why are we doing it?
That's 311,000 kilowatt hours.
It's a great question, right?
Why we do this?
Right.
Great question. So this program is part of the greater program called WattSmart that a lot of our customers and you two folks are very familiar with. That WattSmart program is literally building virtual power plants at a much lower cost, because what we're doing is it's cheaper for us to incent our customers to save energy than for us to go and put more assets in the ground.
And that more assets meaning more lines, more generation. Upgrading or expanding substations.
More power plants.
Right.
Yeah, the generation side.
So, okay. So there's the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And the more the better. Do you have a 311,000 kilowatt hours? Do you have a goal
in
mind?
I'd like to see us hit a million.
Do you think that's possible?
Million kilowatt hours here in Park City.
I mean, when you think about it, 41, that's more than a project a day, you know, and I think we're building up, I mean, ahead of steam. I know the chamber's gone through this. The county had a couple qualifying facilities that went through this as well. A lot of the small businesses that went through it were, our biggest complaint that we hear about this is people say, what's the scam? What's the hook?
Sure.
And it's like, no, really, truly, because the interesting thing is on your power bill, you're actually paying for energy efficiency programs. So our goal is to get that money back to you. To benefit you. So that's the thing is you're already paying for it. So go take advantage of it. Because like I said, it's less than 20 minutes for them to do a quick walkthrough. They plug it into the Wildan team they can plug it into their laptop, run all the numbers right there for you, and you'll know exactly what it is, and they'll get you scheduled, and within a week, you got new light bulbs, and you're saving money.
So I have a good testimonial. Do you want to
hear?
So Lisa Yoder from the county, Summit County,
Lisa.
She says this. Summit County was impressed with the WattSmart Business Direct Install program. It was amazingly simple and fast. I heard the program details on KPCW Thursday. Had a bulb count done Monday, and 97 LEDs were installed Wednesday, less than 1 week from the start to finish. I did nothing but say, yes, let's do it. And it was done.
Perfect.
Yeah. And
you just got that.
Just got that.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
And Bill Malone also, like I said, if folks are interested, reach out to Bill. Went through this for the chamber offices, and same thing. He said it was just quick, painless. Like it's like one of these no-brainer pieces, and our goal is just to get folks signed up.
Okay, quick tech question. As I look out into the studio, lots of businesses may have tube-length CFLs, the typical type of tubes. Can those be swapped out with LEDs readily, or or is that a little more complicated?
Yes, they can.
They can.
So
okay.
So when we do the audit, we will look at that. Will it include fixtures? What will it include? Exactly.
Okay. So that works. So if you're a business, you're listening, say, well, I just have all these CFL tubes. I can't replace. No, the answer is you can do that.
Yes.
Okay. All part of the audit.
All part of
any other programs, projects?
Just a big one coming up this Thursday night. I've got two different things on the agenda. The really interesting thing, again, for businesses, and this will be for the larger business side, we're going to opt into something called CPACE, which is an acronym for Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy. So I'll just call it CPACE. So CPACE allows you to, it's a different financing mechanism to do large-scale energy efficiency upgrades, renewable energy up to 2 megawatts. You can also upgrade elevators. and do seismic protection. And what you can do is the interesting thing about this is this isn't just like a bank loan. It gets rolled together with other projects throughout the state. The Office of Energy Development handles this. And then you get a bond that you pay back through your taxes. So it's a little complicated. If folks are really interested, you can just Google Utah CPACE. After Thursday, we'll have a lot of information if City Council approves it. But it's a really great economic driver. It lowers the threshold. You get better financing rates than pretty much anywhere else you can go. But the great thing for CPACE is it's for large scale, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of upgrades on a facility or something along those lines. This is a big one. The state of Utah made a tweak last year to how CPACE operates. And the great thing is now with the state energy office running it, everything is vetted. All the, you know, everything is reputable and that side of it. But the other great thing is Salt Lake City, Provo, and Moab are all part of this district as well. There's a couple other counties looking at it. The great thing is they can bulk these together and even get better. I mean, we're looking at like municipal bond ratings. So these are really low paybacks. You can take 30 years to pay it back. And then if the building is sold, the improvements transfer with the building. So it just goes to the next owner as well. But it's a really great project if you're looking at doing some large-scale upgrades. Like I said, it's energy efficiency-based, renewable energy, but there's also like seismic protection, and there's a couple other interesting things in there.
Yeah.
Reach out to me. I'll walk you through it. That's a discussion going on Thursday night at council to see if we want to opt in. We'd have to sign a resolution and then do this local agreement thing.
Right.
But we'll get through that. That's a big one for businesses as well. And it's just another tool for folks to do big upgrades.
Okay. And did you say there was another project?
Oh, yeah. I got tons of projects. Okay.
We got another couple minutes.
Yeah, outside of CPACE. The other interesting thing we're actually doing during the work session on Thursday is the concept of, you look at Park City and the open lands that we've put under conservation easements or bought. Let's use the McPullen Barn area as a good example. Mm. It used to be agricultural, as did Clark's Ranch. One of the concepts we're looking at doing is to heal, to improve soil health, improve water quality, and also, believe it or not, we can actually show increased carbon sequestration by reintroducing agriculture in limited ways. So this isn't a grazing lease. This is, we're going to actually improve the lands and use the cattle to kind of do that. Because when you think about it, if you ever look at the really cool old pictures of McPullen Barn, there were cows out there grazing. And that grass was actually used to having that, you know, that disturbance come in.
Right.
And there's certain parts over there, and we're having this discussion in front of City Council saying, hey, we actually have the right now in our conservation easement to reintroduce some agricultural lands. We just want to understand how folks want to learn about this and how it's communicated, because the education piece will be key. Like I said, this isn't a grazing lease. This isn't, you know, it's not going to be a cattle operation over there.
Right.
But there's a potential to be able to see more kind of agricultural uptake over there. And the great thing is it actually helps lead to the city's carbon goals. There's a whole measurement and verification tool that we're working on as well. But the goal is to really, truly get those lands back into a really healthy state. And the great thing is you can do that by, you know, kind of passing cattle through in that side of it. So that's another really cool piece that's going on for a city council discussion on Thursday. We've got more electric buses showing up this fall, so we're starting to get ready for upgrades on that.
Right.
Rocky Mountain Power is a great partner on that. We've got a great white paper coming out with Utah State University looking back at the e-bikes from last year of some of the really kind of quirky things. And I'll get the gentleman who's pulling it together, his name is Zeke, on your show, because it's very different from e-bikes compared to traditional bike shares. Two really interesting facts. Our bike share bikes are ridden 5 times longer than the average bike share bike.
Right.
And the other, you can really tell these are your bikes because people prefer riding them uphill than downhill. So there's a lot of kind of like these interesting things that we can suss out from that as well. There's a lot of really interesting projects. The other really key piece to hit on that folks are going to start seeing a lot more of is SCPW has gone through an amazing change.
Right.
Now they're aligned with Utah Clean Energy, who's kind of an energy powerhouse in the state.
Yeah.
SCPW will still look and feel the same, but the great thing is we've been able to reduce the overhead. We also got them tied with some technical expertises, so there's going to be a lot more to come. You're going to see a kind of a new and improved SCPW rolling out here in the next few weeks.
Summit Community Power Works.
Yep, Summit Community Power Works. That was the nonprofit that was created to go after the Georgetown Energy Prize.
Right.
and that whole fiasco that was mishandled on the Georgetown side. So we went through a transition phase and said, all right, this is a good time to relook at this. And now we're through that transition phase, and we're starting to get into the program implementation phase. And there's some exciting pieces coming out on that, too. On all this stuff.
And what's the city's role with that now?
That's a great question, Nell. So the city and county originally created SCPW to reduce residential energy use. And we can actually show it. We actually saved a ton of people a ton of money.
Right.
Cool.
And it's going to be along those same lines. The Georgetown piece was really limited to just residential and government buildings. We actually think we can help expand it out to some businesses. But the goal is truthfully, if, you know, I'll use myself as an example. I live out in Lower Silver Creek, older log cabin. I've had both Rocky Mountain Power and it was Questar Gas at the time do the walkthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you need to do air sealing. And then you're like, I don't even know who to contact for that or something like that. So the goal is to become that resource. So folks understand these are vetted contractors. These are the ways you can kind of get through all these steps so that way you're not just stuck there holding a piece of paper saying, I don't know the next step. So there's a lot more to come in that world as well. And any of these things I just quickly mentioned, just reach out to me and I'll happily give folks a lot more details.
Fantastic.
All right. Last word. Again, let's just recap again the contacts with respect to this business program. You said you gave two individuals, Cheryl and Andrew. Cheryl's number, 385-261-1462.
That's right.
And Andrew, number 385-441-3880.
Correct.
Correct? Okay. So call Cheryl, Andrew to learn more about this LED lighting swap out program, the details, and set up an audit if you're an eligible business. That would be probably the first thing they'll want to know. And thanks again so much for coming
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Thank you. Park City's been awesome, as always, to work with on this. It's been a real honor for us to be here.
All right.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Chad Ambrose with Rocky Mountain Power, Luke Carton with Park City Municipal. We'll talk again in the fall. We'll get maybe we'll hit that million kilowatt hour mark.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's the plan.
All
right.
Keep
us updated.
One quick break, and then, we got time for maybe a news item or so. It's the Screen Earth. We'll be right back.